Welcome, friends, to the Friends That Carry On podcast, where we dive deeper in our trips, unpack tips, and everything in between. The one who holds the chorch key is your host. Get ready for your ears to go on a trip with your favorite group of friends.
Well, hello, and welcome to Friends That Carry On. We are a group of friends who travel and want to inspire you to do the same, whether it be alone or with friends. However you desire to travel, we just want to promote travel. You can check us out at friendsthatcarryon.com, or you can check us out at Friends That Carry On on Facebook or at Friends That Carry on Instagram, and check out all of our social media for our giveaways and promotions. We always have giveaways and promotions going on, usually. Welcome to today's podcast. Last week we discussed Notre Dame, I think it was, and some of the stories around that iconic landmark and what our experiences were with Notre Dame. If you have anything you want to add to that, please feel free to add that to our conversation. Who do we have with us today in the room? We have
Tony,
Doug Scott,
Ryan Romine,
and I am Eric. And now
we also got
Jim, I forgot, you're not in the room. We have Jim Reed joining us via phone from California. Thanks, Jim.
Glad to be here. Hi from the West Coast.
All right. And today, so here we go. Amsterdam. Are we ready for Amsterdam?
Always ready for Amsterdam.
Always ready for Amsterdam. So we might as well just get it out there in the open right off the bat. Whenever you think Amsterdam, everybody always thinks, oh, you're going to let loose and you're going to smoke weed and do all kinds of sinful things. Well, you can always do that in Amsterdam.
Also,
it's available, right? But there are other things going on in Amsterdam that there are to do, and we're going to discuss all the types of things you can do in Amsterdam today. So we might as well just get right into it and get into the weed thing, right? Mm-hmm. Weed, what can you do? The marijuana thing. What are you allowed to do? What are you not allowed to do? What's the protocol, right? That's always the questions that I get. Are you going, are you going to really, if you've never been, everybody's always like, what are you going to do there? Are you going to do what I think you're going to do there?
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, when we first started traveling to Amsterdam, there was no legalization in the States. So I think it's the same thing now. So if you're going to travel from here to Jim State in California, you're going to travel to Colorado. Mm-hmm. There's a billion things you can do other than just to go to smoke weed. So
right.
I think it's a little unfair for Amsterdam to kind of get that rap. But you're right. That's what they talked about all the time. You're either there to go to the red light district or go to the cafe and smoke weed.
Well, it's not necessarily what they talked about. It's what we got on this part of the world. You understand that? Wow, look at what's happening in Amsterdam. That's everything we got over here.
Yeah.
But they weren't really reporting it like that over there because it had been so mainstream for them anyway.
Right.
They're ahead of the curve as far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
But it's not totally legal, right? I mean, it just like in all of our locations, it's not like you can walk down the street smoking like you can a cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess you can't smoke cigarettes now everywhere either walking down the street.
Right.
But
right.
But, I mean, it's all in cafes or coffee shops, technically.
Coffee shops. Yeah, that's one thing we wanted to clear up, that if anybody out there has never been to Amsterdam and they're curious, Brian.
I have not been to Amsterdam. I'm not saying that I'm curious.
So, well, what are you
saying that I've not been to Amsterdam?
Well, the question is, if you're not interested in it all and you're interested in the city and its art and everything else that goes around it, how do I stay away from it? I don't really want to be.
It's not in your face.
Right. It's not in your face. You have to go to what's called the coffee shops. They're called coffee shops, and that's where the marijuana is sold. And there are also cafes, but they actually sell coffee. So it's kind of confusing if you've never been there to understand that if you're going into a coffee shop, you're going in to smoke and purchase probably marijuana with everyone else.
And the other thing I found interesting, the first time I went, I assumed when we went into a coffee shop that you could go get a beer also, but you couldn't. Don't care to smoke, but I like a beer or whatever potent potables available, and was shocked that, or not shocked, but found out that it's two different licenses. You can either have a one to sell marijuana or one to sell alcohol. You can't have both in the same place.
There were a couple of places that we've been in and out of bars where it's literally a little doorway to neighboring establishments. It's kind of like, hey, you can walk through that doorway or you walk through this doorway.
And why they decide to call them coffee shops, I don't know. Any inkling behind that, Jim? Do you know? Or?
I have no idea. It just might be so that it's not too much in your face. Right. You know, back in the day when it wasn't as widely accepted as it is now, or it has been in the last decade, maybe that just gave you a little bit of cover so you weren't going into, you know, the huge Bob Marley joint place or something like that, you know, another name like that. You could sneak in. Today, though, you know, a lot of them do have joints on their signs, or they sell ribs right across the street for when you're done with the coffee shop.
Yeah.
You can sort of, you know, spot them pretty easily, but you won't go in by accident. But I don't know the history. Sorry.
Well, I don't know if it's true, but, you know, again, this is not based off of any fact other than what the owners there was spouting off, was that historically they were coffee shops.
Mm-hmm.
And that, they kind of, before it really became a commonplace, it was something they just did on the side. So and that it, you it, just bought weed, and, then, sent, and
yeah.
then once it became
everybody
kind of like
coffee
this,
shop to smoke it.
It was like, right. Okay, well, we just kept them called coffee shops.
Yeah.
So
when did the... Jim, I think you just mentioned about a decade ago or so, but how long has Amsterdam been kind of officially open to this? How long has it been legal? You know, here in the States, obviously, right now we're going through, over the last several years, you know, many states are legalizing it for medicinal purposes or just for, I guess, a certain amount that you can keep. I didn't know if Amsterdam went through some sort of similar history. Does anybody know about that?
No, because it's not used for medical reasons in Amsterdam. Let's just
get out of the way.
Right. I mean, that was our way around. That was their way around it here. But they didn't have to. They didn't have to do a workaround in Amsterdam because of their tolerance.
That was
policies.
I guess my question maybe was more about how long has this tolerance been there, and that's about 2 years.
It's a long time.
I think it's about 2 decades.
It became legal in the early 2000s, around 2003.
Okay.
Yeah.
But prior to that, it was...
Yeah, I guess it was...
They've done
it
like here.
It's a coffee shop.
Well, they've done it similar to a lot of Scandinavian countries, and they view it more as a health decision as opposed to a legal decision. I mean, mm-hmm. it's no different than smoking cigarettes or drinking beer or... You know, eating bad food.
Or the other
it's
thing in Amsterdam, which is prostitution. and their legality of it and how they... the reason I bring that up is because my tchotchke is the banana bar ticket, which isn't a... It's... How do I describe it? It was a bar for entertainment. And
it's entertainment.
Just leave it there.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I just... to answer Brian's question, I Googled it. So it was illegal starting in 1913... But in 1972, they divided drugs into different classes and less dangerous categories is where marijuana fell. And cannabis became available for recreational use in coffee shops since 1976.
Wow.
But then in 2003 is when it became openly
okay.
available.
There you have it. According to Google.
According to Google.
God bless Google.
God bless Google. We hope they're right. So for those of you out there, that's Google's definition of what's going on and what's happened in Amsterdam.
But again, it's still one of those things. You can't walk down the street. You can't, I mean, they don't frown upon it, or they, you know, if it's privacy of your own home,
right,
or in the coffee shops. But just like you can't buy a beer in a bar, usually in most places, unless it's Vegas, you can't buy a beer in one bar and walk to the next bar. Same with the coffee shops. You can't buy something in one coffee shop and walk into the next.
Exactly.
Shop.
Well, yeah, they don't want you doing that.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah,
they frown upon it. They can't actually stop it, but they frown upon it. And usually people would buy it. And
I did read one article, though, where they did say certain places you were able to bring your own in. But it was really frowned upon if you didn't at least buy something else while you were there.
Yeah.
So it does sound like it's not that you're able to carry
your
own
in,
I guess, to a certain extent.
There was one place, and I couldn't even remember exactly where in the city it was, but they've all kind of taken like their little twists, you know, on what the coffee shop is. And the one had just unbelievable juice bar.
Mm-hmm.
Like they can't serve alcohol, but the crazy juice bar concoctions they were coming up with. So they were kind of that same thing. It was almost like a service fee if you brought it in. But they would sell you all the paraphernalia to go with it you didn't have it. Okay. And then, but they wanted you to buy, mm-hmm. you know, a big thing of juice or something.
I do
their version of the corkage fee.
Right, exactly.
I do want to pass along to anybody interested in it. I'm the only admitted smoker here. And a little bit of advice is when you go into Amsterdam and you're purchasing, you're basically in a line behind everyone else. And they make what's called, or what Bob Marley once phrased as a spleef or a spliff. And they will mix tobacco with the marijuana. And a lot of Americans aren't used to that. They're just used to smoking the marijuana itself, either from a bong or from whatever. But they mix it with tobacco, and it could be quite a, if you don't know that, if you don't know they're doing that, it is quite the experience, because you're not used to smoking tobacco, and it treats you differently.
Yeah.
And so that's just a tidbit of information. You want to, if you ask for it, make sure you ask for a spleef is mixed with tobacco or no spleef, and it's all product and no tobacco at all.
No clue.
Yeah. Right, see, exactly. Yeah. But those of you that have any interest, there you go.
So what's next on our list?
Well, I mean, we'll switch topics here and go to the other great, the great thing I think about Amsterdam, and that's everything else that surrounds it besides those two things, which is its art, the Rijksmuseum, which is probably my favorite.
It is my favorite.
It's a couple of people in here, their favorite museums. Why is it my favorite? Why do I like it better than the Louvre? Well, I don't know. I like the Dutch, plain and simple, I like the Dutch Masters better than I do what's in the Louvre. I'm just different like that. And I'm sure there are a lot of people that are the other way around, but I love the Dutch Masters. I love what they present. I love what they have in there. And I could go in there every time I visit Amsterdam.
I think I have, except for the layover, which wasn't really an option when you right. land at midnight and leave at 8 in the morning.
Yeah, but they do have the small Rijksmuseum pop-up in the airport, I think, still. So you can't go in and see that even.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned the airport too, Jim, because that's another one of my favorite airports in all the world is Schiphol. However you pronounce it. It's a wonderful airport. I think it's my favorite that I've ever been to, only because of its choices of food. There's
it's
a lot
everything.
Of it has everything, which I've often said. Amsterdam doesn't really do a certain cuisine really well, like Italians do Italian food well. Amsterdam, in my opinion, does everyone's food well, whether it be Indonesian, Italian, whatever it is. Every place I've ever gone, it's always been exceptionally well, very well done.
It reminds me a lot of sort of how in the States we refer to New York. It's a huge melting pot. So many different ethnicities, languages. I mean, sitting at a bar in Amsterdam for a few hours, you can hear at least a half a dozen languages going on. And just like you said about cuisine, I'll be honest, to this day, now that may change when I spend a little bit more time in Italy.
And Greece.
But we had literally just went to Venice that day, or that week, right? And then our last stop was Amsterdam. And the best Italian food I've had was in Amsterdam.
Right.
It was so damn good that we actually went back two nights in a row. And I never go back to eat dinner at the same place twice on vacation.
That was me and you and Shelley. And we all three agreed. We're going to go to dinner tonight. And we're like, let's just go back to the Italian place.
It's just so damn good.
I know.
So, I mean, so you're right. But they were Italian people who obviously had lived, but their food was phenomenal.
Right. It was really
But it does good. Remind me a lot of that, and that there's just, it's just a melting pot of people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it probably goes back to when they were a world power and they're traveling all over the world. So that comes, those cultures that they bring back come back, but then it's such an easy place to get to. And it's like Schiphol is always a transfer, it seems like, for a lot of different airlines. There's a lot of different reasons over many hundreds of years of why that's a melting pot. But yeah, I agree. It's very much that.
Yeah, Jim, we were just talking about our layover. That layover we were talking about was on our James Bond trip, you know, from the Pamplona down to Africa. And that was our layover back. So we spent that whole week down in
That was how we ended
Marrakesh,
that trip was Amsterdam.
And our layover was in Amsterdam. And that's not a typical layover. When you land like 11:30 or midnight,
yeah.
And then you decide to still go into town.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, Teresa had never been in Amsterdam, so she wanted to get a little flavor of it. And if you're going to be in there, we didn't, our flight out went to like 10, but we had to, you know, get to the airport up by like 8 or so. But hey, we were all game, and we didn't get to our hotel till like 2 o'clock, or we're leaving our hotel at 2 o'clock to head downtown to. And the hotel's by the airport, so it's still a 20-minute ride in. So it was a heck of an evening. We made it in town. We got to see the sights and partake in a few things. So it was a memorable night. I don't know if we want to go into all those details now, but
we have to tell the story of the guy letting us in the bar, though.
That was pretty cool.
Right.
The funny thing, though, again, Jim, you'll appreciate this. So even though we did find some beer in Marrakesh, you know, that week was a little bit more on the relaxation standpoint. Wasn't, you know, too much drinking and stuff.
Well, we were there in the middle of Ramadan. So,
yeah. So when we get on the airplane, I just pretty much told the flight attendant, Eric and I were drinking Amstel Lights.
You know,
why not, right? You're going to Amsterdam. And I just said, hey, can you just have a standing order for like 2? And just every time you walk by, you bring us 2.
She said.
And surprisingly, she said, yes. I'm not used to that. Usually like.
Because they were free, right?
Weren't they free?
No,
it was Ryanair. Y'all were paying.
Yeah, we were paying.
I've been on a flight to Amsterdam and
Heineken was free from here, but not from there.
Oh, okay.
We were paying for it, but it was pretty. It was pretty funny. So we literally had. Oh my goodness! I don't know how many beers, but I don't think I've had that many beers on a flight. We were usually they don't let you do that. But yeah, so we landed and then we get into the hotel out there. They had imagine going into like a 7-Eleven, like the stand up coolers that you can pull out a soda. They had beer in there. We're like, we can just buy this? They're like, sure. But then they're like, hey, can we get a ride downtown? The guy was out there with a van. He's like, it's a little late, but okay. We're like, wow. All right. So, yeah, so we literally get like a 12-pack of beer out of the hotel cooler and jump in a van at 2 o'clock in the morning to go downtown
Amsterdam looking for trouble.
Well, looking for fun, but
looking for fun,
everything was closing.
So we get down there just briefly for a beer and a coffee house, but by 3 o'clock, everything's closing. So we're like, yeah, this is Amsterdam. It's a major city. There's got to be some after-hour places. So first we're told at this one little bar we found that there's this after-hours party you can go to. It's right up like 2 blocks away. And so we're like, hey, well, that's great. Cool. We go up there, and we're at it, and it was at the right address. And then some guy from the second floor window just started yelling and cussing at us. Get out of here. What are you doing? Go away. So we're like, okay. So then we slink up an alley, and there's apparently it's an Albanian bar, and the lights were still on, the open sign, the lit Amstel light, little beer lights that bars have. So we go there, we're looking in the door, we're like, can we get a beer?
Yeah, he was getting ready to turn off the light. He just looked out, was getting to shut the door, and we're like, please, let us in.
So he kind of looked and looked back over his shoulder and looked back at us and then just started waving us in. So we're like, okay. And he didn't stop us at the bar. He waved us into a back room.
And the funniest thing about the back room, Jim, so literally, again, we just leave Marrakesh. The back room was decorated like South Africa. Literally, it was all little table.
North
Africa. It had a small little table. And giant cushions and things are wrapped around it. We were kind of laying on the floor. We left at like 7 o'clock in the morning.
I'm pretty sure there were a couple of fezzes around, too.
Anyway, but it was just one of those weird things you don't expect you're going to run into.
And the next thing you know, we're there for a couple of hours.
And then we're trying to figure out, how are we going to get a cab back to the airport at 7 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, then it dawns us because it's daylight's breaking and we got to get back, pack our bags and get on a flight.
I didn't even go to bed. I literally went and showered and packed and jumped back on the tram and went straight to the airport. But back when the thing you're talking about, the art. So we kind of glossed over that. But,
yeah.
I mean, I will say, I'm pretty sure Terry agrees at least from perspective, Rice is my favorite. And I have to say the Van Gogh Museum, which is pretty much right next to it, is phenomenal if you like Van Gogh. So Jim, did you ever get to Van Gogh?
I didn't. I love the Rijksmuseum. I would put the Van Gogh, you know, just ahead of it for me. We went there. I went there with my wife the year after we'd gone to the south of France and stayed right across the street from the asylum where Van Gogh had checked himself in when he had his breakdown. Mm-hmm. And you know, you walk through there today and it still looks like his paintings. And so, you know, fast forward like about 9 months later, we found ourselves at the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam, walking around and just recognizing, you know, oh yeah, I remember these fields of lavender with the little Alps behind them. And, you know, I remember this building, this is a sanitarium, this was his room, all those sorts of things like that. The other thing I really love about that museum is the paintings are displayed chronologically.
Yeah.
So you walk through and you see how he develops as an artist. You also start seeing his state of mind, you know, as it starts becoming more and more sort of holding on, you know, for dear life. Just an amazing thing to walk through that, I think.
I agree. And I love the intimacy of both of them, how close you can actually get to the works of art. I mean, there's no barriers. There's no ropes. I mean, you can stick your nose 6 inches from it for the most part. And there's some pieces they do.
Right.
They don't do that. But the crowds also typically aren't over the top.
The large Dutch master paintings, they just blew my mind away. They were so huge. Am I right? I thought I heard somewhere where someone told me that some of those oils on some of those paintings are still wet. Is it? I'm not making that up.
Possible?
I swear I heard that somewhere. Does that make any sense or
no?
Am I just dreaming? I might have drunk. I digress.
I think that was after your coffee shop.
That was after.
After
my split.
But yeah, they are there.
I've not been there. Okay. So tell me a little bit more about the Rijksmuseum. What you guys like about that?
I can tell you the Night Watch, which is to me one of the awesome paintings in the world, is there. Mm-hmm. It's phenomenal. Just absolutely phenomenal. But again, I'm with Eric.
The Dutch masters.
I think people, you just kind of, there's an art style you like, and most of them fit into what I like. So you're there, and most of the Dutch masters are at Rijks.
And
so,
what amazes me, what I found, and I'm not much of an artiste, artist connoisseur, but what really stood out to me was some of the battle scene paintings that they drew of battle scenes and ship. I'm talking ship battle scenes. So to be able to capture a ship battle scene and put it on canvas it can't be very easy. You know, it's not easy to capture those with photography, mm-hmm. let alone you're capturing that and you're going to remember it and put it onto canvas with paint, oil paint. And the way they capture it just really kind of captured me as far as give you a reason why I like the Rijksmuseum.
I love that type of painting because of the way that it just sort of captures humanity. Even though there's big boats on there, they're interesting people on top of the boats and they're looking right at you. And,
right.
And they invite you to look at their face and try to figure out what the hell they're thinking or feeling. It's a really expressive type of art.
Yes. It's hard to really describe, but other than I feel like every time I see one, it's very recognizable that it's a Dutch just because.
And I did not know that and wasn't educated to that until I went. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I had no interest in art. I had no interest in, you know, anything like that. But for someone like that, that captured me more than the Louvre did. I'm not downplaying the Louvre at all. It's just, you know, it's just my particular kind of taste and everyone's different. Go ahead, Jim.
We need to come up with an excuse for us to travel to Brussels. You know, Terry Hall and I went there last year, and the Flemish artists are very close to the Dutch masters.
Oh, really?
Same sort of thing. And there's so many of them, both in the churches and the museums. And they have very good beer, too. It would be a good excuse for us to travel again.
Good reason. Just FYI, I don't think we ever really need an excuse or a reason. Just a decision or somebody to pull the trigger, right? And the next thing you know, we're going.
I did have FOMO when you were on that Brussels trip. I wanted to go. I just couldn't get the time to go.
Yes, I would love to do that.
Now that we're talking about the art scene, I'd like to get into a little bit about the city itself and how it's laid out and really the coolest thing to me, the first time going into Amsterdam was, of course, into the train station. It's really iconic. And when you come out of the train station, you see almost the entire city, and it is laid out in front of you, and you're like, wow. You don't know, you know, and on the first thing you see are bicycles. Everywhere.
Bicycle garage.
That's bicycle like garage. More bicycles. You will see more bicycles in Amsterdam than I've ever seen anywhere. And as many bikes in Amsterdam as there are mopeds in Vietnam. Maybe more. I don't know. And to let you know, the bikes, they have the right of way. They have the legal right of way in Amsterdam over everyone. Walkers, people, buses, trams. It seems that way to me anyway. Am I right, Jim, you think?
Oh, absolutely. And despite the fact that marijuana is more or less legal there, you rarely see biker pedestrian accidents. I don't know how they manage that. Seems like that would be a disaster.
They have a phenomenal system of how they get their bikes around that. You know, their bikes are guided around that city like our cars are guided around our city. They have markers on the paths.
Yeah, those lanes.
And the lanes, and they're for the bikers. And if you are a walker and you step out into the bike lane, you better look out because they're not stopping and they're going to run into you.
Yeah,
you have to look left and right.
That's the first thing to keep track of.
Deep trouble.
It is. Because there's that, it's almost like going to a median. There's usually a bike path section, and then you get to the next median, which is then the cars or the
and I've been saved several times by you
somebody
guys.
Reaching out
and grabbing.
Hey, where are you going?
Aaron, don't step out there. Whoa, and pull me back. Seriously, that's happened more than two or three times.
Well, yeah, because here it looks like a median. Like that. Right. Okay, well, the cars aren't coming, so I can just step one out another 5 or 6 feet, but you're stepping square into a bike.
Same thing with the trains and the trams that go through the city. They're extremely quiet. You cannot hear them. They sneak up on you like a leopard. You can't hear them. And if you're on that track, they are right there, and they'll blow that horn, and they'll make you jump off that track.
Hopefully,
right.
Well, they will scare you.
They will scare you.
The other thing with the bikes that I found interesting, I'm sure there's exceptions to what I'm going to say, but they all seem to be gray and like what we would consider like 1950s style bikes, you know, not like the 10 speeds and fancy ones we have now. They're just that 1950s, all gray.
Just a mode of transportation.
Just a mode of transportation. And I might be wrong on this, so I don't want to say it's a fact, but if I remember right, it's sort of ride and go. I mean, if you leave your bike somewhere and somebody else could come along and take it and ride it, you just pick up the next one and go.
If you don't lock it up.
If you don't lock it up and all, right. I mean, you obviously, but I mean, it's because they're all pretty much the same. But I got that impression.
Between 50,000 and 80,000 bikes are stolen every year in Amsterdam. They dredge over 10,000 bikes out of the canals every year.
Those are the reported ones.
Wow.
Why would you put any extra money into a better bike?
Yeah. So now I have a feeling I need to go back and revisit. Does that marijuana seem really not have an effect on these bikes? 10,000 bikes out of the canal.
Well, some of that could be just fun. Hey, this is a junk bike. I'm going to just ride that square into the canal.
Well, like you said, a lot of times what people will do is they'll go out, and if there's a bike and they need to get somewhere and it's not locked up, they're just going to take it. But the people that left it there, they know that.
They know that, yeah.
And they'll take some of
that. Exactly.
That's you're right. That's the parking garage, right? When I got off that train the first time, I was like,
that's all
bikes. I have never seen anything like that in my entire life.
Thousands of bikes. You're talking 3, 4, 5 levels of a parking garage, and it's all bikes. All bikes, thousands of them.
And not just parked neatly.
They're piled on.
So how many people are employed in Amsterdam in the bicycle repair?
I don't know. We're not the Chamber of Commerce, so we don't know if there's employment numbers. You'll have to check out Amsterdam Chamber of Commerce for that one.
So when you're talking about the layout of the city, though, to me, the best part about it is the canals.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, other than Venice, I don't know if I've ever been to a city that has more of a canal culture.
So, right. What canal culture? Just talking about transportation or hanging out on the canals?
Well, if you go back to
there's more bridges in Amsterdam than there are in Venice.
The way they close them off. But so Venice, I know for sure, Dubrovnik in Croatia, mm-hmm. even in Amsterdam, were originally, there were roads. They were all canals. Right. It was just all boat traffic in and around. You know, in the years, Amsterdam and even Venice and even in Croatia, they all have closed off certain canals and turned them into roads for either walking, biking, or cars. But before that, it was all transportation via boats. So there was this thing is, like we're used to right now, city blocks. Your city blocks were waterways. Yep. So, and, you know, for the most part, the central part of the historic city in Amsterdam is still nothing but canals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You pretty much can't walk anywhere without being along or and seeing waterway. And there's a lot of houseboats and all parked along them. And all the, I won't say all of them, but I think most of the canals are connected. So you can, it's still a,
yeah,
a waterway, but I mean, it's connected for travel. You can get eventually out into the sea or to the bigger places or whatever, but you can get around town. We'll talk about it a little bit, but I mean, we did a boat canal tour, which is really cool, which opens up to a lot of that. But it's beautiful. It's also clean. And just when you're taking a walk down the street, a stroll, it can be a romantic walk or just a beautiful walk or whatever it is, but it's beautiful. The little bridges, even getting to the red light district during the day, you have no idea that that's you know, most cities, when you're in that part of town, which is prostitution and all that, I mean, the lights and just sort of see, has a little dinginess to it. During the day, you don't know it's a red light district. It seems like these beautiful townhomes from the 1700s along the canals. I mean, it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, at night, lights go on and it gets a little crazy. But it's amazing the way they keep it. It's a beautiful city all the way around. The canals really add to that ambiance.
You know, Jim, you talked about the area down around the red light district. I know I've talked with friends who were taking their families over there, and they were a little afraid of going down in the daytime to the red light district, which is a shame because there's nothing to be afraid of, like you said. And a couple of the best things to see are right down there. There's the Rembrandt House that he lived in that you can tour. It's a museum now. And have any of you guys been to the Our Lord in the Attic Church there?
I've been by it.
I didn't actually go in. I think I walked past it to head to the Anne Frank house that one day, but I didn't actually go in.
It's, you know, right there in the middle of the red light district. I was thinking about this as I was thinking about last week's conversation with Notre Dame about Notre Dame. This is the exact opposite of Notre Dame. This is a hidden church that sprung up when Catholicism was illegal in the Netherlands. And one guy just took his, you know, fourth floor walk up and made the attic a fully functional church and conducted services in there until Catholicism was made legal again. Just, it's really beautiful. It's like a 1650s, I think, building more or less. But something to go see. Get over the fear of the red light district and head down there.
Absolutely.
100% agree.
I mean, that's a very good part of town. The canals down there are beautiful. Tons of, the architecture is phenomenal.
Lots of restaurants.
Yeah.
Lots of everything.
The worst thing you're going to see is a nice young lady in a bikini in a window.
Yeah.
Not even during the day, you won't.
Not during the day, but
yeah, you will.
Not near as prevalent.
Correct.
So, just remember, don't take your camera at night because you're not allowed to take pictures.
But we've seen plenty of YouTube video, right? Yeah. So if you want that part of it, go to YouTube.
But some of the more fun, again, we're just talking about it from the 30,000 foot view. But there's some really cool, you know, just fun things to do while you're there, other than seeing great art and great architecture. I mean, I don't know if all of us did. I know several of us have done like the Heineken experience.
Where
it all started. Even if you don't love Heineken, there's that whole concept of going in and drinking.
It's the same concept as Guinness. Is it better there? Yes, it is. 100% it is. Why? I was never a big Heineken drinker, and it gets really skunky when it gets, you know, when it gets hot and not cold. But there, they have it on tap. It's called an ice tap.
The ice tap, yeah.
And the tap is actually iced up to the moving part.
Yep.
So it comes out extremely cold, and it is extremely good to me.
Yeah, it comes out at about 35 degrees Fahrenheit.
It's wonderful.
That was good. And I did enjoy that tour.
The Heineken Tour. Yeah, what did they, just real quick, give us a 1 or 2 minute.
Well, I mean, it's similar to any, I mean, you're going, you're going to hear all about how they brew it, and mm-hmm. it's all about Heineken, you go through it, but it's just neat. It's a lot of interesting facts you didn't know. Mm-hmm. When I went there, I was not a Heineken fan. It's just right. something to do. Yeah. It was first time being in Amsterdam. But it was interesting, and you're right, the Heineken was a lot better.
Yeah, one of the things that was memorable for me from that, other than, you know, the beer, but they were like, when they first started distributing, so they truly distributed, which a lot of places didn't back then. They did it in a horse-drawn carriage. I mean, mm-hmm. so I mean that's how old school it was. They were distributing beer via the carriages. But
right.
the other thing I don't think any of us have ever done that it's on the list is King's Day.
Right, that's major on the list.
Yeah,
that may be in the works.
We're talking about that for next year, Jim, just in case.
Yeah, just.
Throwing it out there.
Jerry's high on it. I'm very high on it. Tony bringing it up, I assume he is. It's April 27th, by the way.
Yeah.
That's the current king's birthday, if I understand the way it works right now.
Yeah.
It's been various monarchs' birthday, and right now it's the king's, and it's in April, end of April.
The current king.
Yeah, April 27th. Yeah. So it's basically their version of Mardi Gras or just a big party. It's a huge
in
festival.
Canals.
Yeah.
And orange is their color. Just if you can go back to the
team.
Yeah, everything's
football
orange.
And soccer is
everything's orange. It goes back, I guess, the House of Orange, the Lord of Orange, or whatever.
Right.
But it looks like an incredible time. And just for that whole weekend, sort of like Oktoberfest, even though Oktoberfest lasts several weeks, it's just a huge party.
Seems like something we should all visit.
I absolutely.
Everywhere throughout the city.
It's encapsulated within kind of the canal region,
right?
Which is the central mm-hmm. part there.
But, well, yeah, which is kind of what I want to get back into is, you know, you can, what I think it was me, myself, and Terry, and it might have been Lee Lucas. You weren't with us, Jim, were you? When we took the trains to the edge of the city as far as the trains would go. And worked our way back in. And Amsterdam is kind of built in a semicircle,
mm-hmm.
you know, and every little road is a little bigger than the other one because it's a semicircle. So that's where the trains travel back into the city. And it's kind of interesting because we would stop and just get off of a train stop. Hey, let's stop at this little town and go grab a beer or a cappuccino or whatever and just check it out. And I highly advise that because it's a really good way to see Amsterdam and the outskirts of Amsterdam and what goes on the everyday, and you know what I mean, and not just the central part of it that's so congested.
It's Eric, cool. did you guys make it out to Harlem on that trip?
Oh my gosh, I can't. I don't remember if we did or not.
It's about a 15-minute train ride out, as I remember it. It's a beautiful little town. If you can go there on Market Day, it's just one of those things. You know, the flowers are unbelievable. And I know they've got the flower market in Amsterdam itself, but Harlem is just so small and pretty.
Yeah. And now I didn't even think about the markets. The markets are some of the best markets I've ever seen in Europe.
And the flowers, and the you can't even describe the flowers though. I mean, you like tulips. Yeah. My God, I've never seen anything like that as far as the color.
Well, I remember the Stroopwafel. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
So good.
The frites too. Oh,
the frites, the French fries with the mayonnaise. Right, the best I've ever had in my life.
Yeah,
Terry turned me on to those.
Oh yeah,
the frites and mayonnaise, mm-hmm. and they're big like steak fries. They're just better. I don't know why, but they are. They're just better.
Yeah, no, the markets are great. I mean, the whole city just kind of thrives in different ways, which is really cool.
I don't know how to describe like the volume of things that you can actually do. You know, and again, I hate to keep describing it close to New York, but it's very similar in that there's so many different little subsections of the city. There's so many things that they do and do well. The transportation is kind of great. And I will say to this day, and I haven't been with you guys as a group yet in Southeast Asia, but I will say this, the craziest cab ride I've ever been on in my entire life.
Was Amsterdam?
Yes. That whole combination of this guy trying to get us to from point A to point B as fast as possible and battling with bikes was one of the best. I've never gone from, you know, 0 miles per hour to 90 miles per hour and 30 miles per hour so fast. And to watch a person tailgate a lady on a bike with a four-year-old in a seat behind her on a bike was a little...
Unnerving?
Like, and he's blowing the horn at her. Like, well, she's not supposed to be in this lane. I'm like, what? Okay.
Again, like I said, bicycles have the right of way. Sometimes cab drivers.
Marrakesh was a bad cab ride.
Yes, no, this is still today.
So, Brian, from a person who's never been there, do you have any other questions? Any concerns? What have we not answered as far as? I'm sure there are things that we haven't gone over as far as Amsterdam's concerned.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, no concerns. I don't think I've ever gotten the feeling that there were any sorts of dangers within Amsterdam.
No, never.
But if you were to go back again, or when you go back again, what's a great part of the city to stay in? What would be your first and second choice?
That's a great question, because that's a great segue. The last time I was in Amsterdam, I stayed with Terry, and it was a couple other people also. But Amsterdam, it's so old. Getting up the stairway was a spiral staircase, and it was the tightest spiral staircase you've ever seen in your life to get up to our room. And, you know, when you spend 3 days in Amsterdam and you're partaking in everything that Amsterdam has to give, it's hard to climb those stairs sometimes at night when you're coming home. So they're very old. But it was a great apartment, because it was right across from when you get out of the train station and you look and see Amsterdam, you see all the bikes and you see the canals and you see all the hotels lined up, but Airbnbs, whatever they are, and all the businesses. That's where we stayed. Airbnb right across from the train station, and it was awesome. It was old time. It was old school. It was up a tight spiral staircase, and I was like, man, I really feel like I'm in the moment. I'm in Amsterdam, and you could go anywhere from there. You know, once you get onto the train or the tram, and
if you make it down the steps,
we stayed in Airbnb, probably not far from there, because. It might have been the same trip.
It was.
But it was the place was from 1600.
Right.
So as you're going up the steps, the step is step, instead of being the usual foot or foot and a half wide, I mean, it gets narrow, and it gets more narrow, both width and the step width on the actual step, as you go higher. So you're carrying up your bags, and you got three or four flights to go up, and I'm proud, kind of a wide body.
It's getting tighter.
It's just getting tighter by my shoulder. Sideways, plus my bags to get up the steps. We eventually get up there, and the apartment itself was beautiful. It had a nice loft. But once again, it was more steps up, and so you had two layers here. But then you had shared bathrooms and all this stuff. So there's negatives and positives. It was a great location, beautiful apartment, but then the steps, you know, were six from the 1600s, because, hey, people were a lot smaller then, and that's just the way they built stuff.
Right. I would say that if you're going to stay, especially your first time, and that's pretty much any city you go to, you want to stay in the kind of like the heart, mm-hmm. where most of the things that you want to try to visit are.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they call it center city, but mm-hmm. I think, Eric, you mentioned the heart, it really looks like a horseshoe. Mm-hmm. And with the river coming through and the train center is kind of at the top of the horseshoe, then all the canals kind of take that horseshoe shape.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then they crisscross, of course, but any place within that is phenomenal, because you're walking distance
from everything you need.
Yeah.
Right? There's so much within walking distance you can do. It'll definitely occupy 3 to 4 up to a week, really. Or maybe even more. It depends on what you want to do.
I think almost all the cities are 3 days.
Yeah.
You know, 3 days you can see a good feel for it. You're not gonna see everything,
right?
No, yeah. But
right.
3 days, you can see a good bit of it. But another cool experience, though. I don't know, you did it. It was just you, me, Terry, and Shelley.
Oh, right.
Was one of the original ice bars.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So where?
I totally forgot about that.
We stayed in. We actually stayed in a hotel, and it was in Centrum, but it was only about 3 blocks from that Italian place that we were talking about, and we checked in, and of course we couldn't get into our rooms yet because, you know, we were early rivals, and checked our bags, and we were like, oh, the ice bar is right around the corner. So go in there, and it's still one of my favorite pictures.
Right.
We walk in. Of course, they have a 14-foot like stuffed polar bear up there. I get a picture of Terry hugging it. Not sure why he wanted to hug it, but it made a great picture. But it was just my first experience of going to an ice bar. You know, so they made you put on, you know, this heavy stuff.
Parkas, right.
And line to the gillet, and you go down, and you have like a 45-minute max that you're allowed to stay there.
Make you take a picture.
But everything is made of ice.
That's all
right.
The shot glasses. The extra cold ice bar. Is that what it is?
Yeah, even the shot glasses.
Mm-hmm. So all the shot glasses were out of ice glasses.
Even the bar stools were made of ice.
Everything was made of ice.
I remember seeing some of those pictures.
They have hotels made of ice.
But it was pretty cool. And so I would say it's one of those things that if you're there, you know, you stop in it. It's an hour of your time.
Right.
You know, you just
and it's in. Worth it.
Yeah, it's just kind of a fun thing to do.
Right.
And it is, I think, this I don't know, but I'm pretty sure it's either the original ice bar. There's been multiple ones that come out now.
Right.
But I think that's like the original.
The very first one.
Another great thing to do, and I got surprised with this because when we went in 2015, it was my 50th birthday, and the other guys went together and bought us a trip with for a canal tour, but it wasn't just canal tours with, and give these guys a plug, is those damn boat guys. And it was a phenomenal trip. So if you ever get a chance to go there, and we'll talk about it here in a second, and it was just great. One, the guys are really laid back. They tell you all the history, but you know, it's not like it's rehearsed and all that. They're giving you the straight lowdown. They tell you about what, you know, what's going on here, there, why, the good and the bad. But going through those canals and underneath some of the bridges, we went through the lowest bridge. I mean, we had to duck down and literally end the boat itself to get through it. But it was pretty cool. We did it. It went, took us all the way out and then back through again. And I didn't know there was this. I mean,
How long did it take?
Oh, it was a couple of hours.
It was well worth it. We could take drinks with us.
We took wine with us. What was funny is, not to interrupt, I'm sorry.
No, please.
What was funny was we were the only ones that brought anything to drink.
Yeah.
Everybody, you know, it was a very intimate tour. It was maybe a dozen to 15 people. And it was a group of guys that started their own business because they had worked for the bigger boat companies. And they're like, we can do it better. And you know what? We feel that they did.
Yeah.
Because it was very good. It was very intimate. It was worth it. Terry and I did it. I think, and Lee maybe, and did it for Jim's birthday because it was his birthday trip. And we're like, let's go on this damn boat tour.
Yeah.
Terry found it again.
So we took some wine and some cheese and that type of stuff and was on that. But it was a beautiful day. It's just a beautiful setting. But then you really got a feel for how the canals connect and how you can travel around. And eventually we went out into the big part. We weren't out in the sea, whatever, just like before the breakers. Right. And there's the big museum and big ships, so you're out in that and then back into the canals. It was well worth it. We got to see the zoo. We didn't know there was a zoo there.
That's actually a big attraction.
Yeah, I never knew it existed.
We had just gotten on the trip, and we're coming down the canals, and we see giraffes over here.
We're asking, there's a giraffe head floating, right? Where did that come from?
Yeah, that's actually one of the top zoos in the world.
Yeah.
We had no idea until we saw it on that damn boat tour.
Yeah, we sit on the backside. So it was, I highly encourage it. Those guys are great. I mean, there's other boat tours, but.
Yeah, highly recommend those damn boat guys. They did well with us.
I was surprised and was very grateful for the gift they gave because that was a great trip.
Yeah, that was fun.
Do you remember the name of the company?
That's what
those damn boat guys.
Those damn boat guys.
You didn't catch on to that, did you?
Yeah. He was like, wow, for them liking it, that's a very
like job. I said, it was a group of fellas that were working for the larger boat company.
Knowing Jim as long as I've known him, I guess that's the way he describes things.
That was the name. Actually, Terry found them. Those damn boat guys. So, you know, once he saw that name, he's like, we're going to be taking that tour.
Terry, I think, is the only one that has done this, but. You know, we stayed at Airbnbs and done hotels. He actually did a houseboat.
Right.
As part of the Airbnb.
Oh,
you can actually do some houseboat stuff. So that's also another thing.
You can rent Airbnbs as or houseboat Airbnbs along.
They're all parked
in canals.
And
absolutely.
There. So that's just another thing.
That's
to
a
keep
big
in mind.
Part of their business in there. That would be very cool. And Terry could give a lot of time on that.
Let me throw out a question to Jim Reed there. I haven't heard from Jim in a little bit. What's a couple restaurants, Jim, that you would recommend?
Your favorite in Amsterdam.
Wow.
I love the Indonesian food there. I don't have the name of a particular restaurant, but you'll see them down around the city center and especially around the red light district, just a couple blocks off, where they sell those, these meals that are just one plate after another of Indonesian food coming out. That's always a great thing to eat. We've mentioned the frites before. There's another, I can't remember the name of this, but there's another chain that basically you go in, you put your money in a little slot, and you open up a door.
Fibo.
That's right. Fibo. You got to eat Fibo when it's about 1 o'clock in the morning and you're blitzed on something. And you get this food. You have no idea what the hell it is. It's just deep fried whatever. And that first bite, you know, you're taking your life into your hands, but it's almost always really good.
It is. It's one of the most – I had that – I actually wanted to bring it up that it was – it's the only place that I've probably ordered a meal out of a vending machine. Literally, in the middle of the night, that tasted good.
They say vending machine, but what's funny is behind that wall – of little door, you open up a little door in a wall. So you have a huge wall and there's all these little doors. You open up this little door and there's a sandwich waiting for you. But behind it is a chef actually making that thing for you. And
I can't confirm nor deny.
It feels
like a vending machine.
There you go. There you have it.
But yeah, that was
Fibo.
Terry's the one that convinced me. I was like, no. Nope, not going to do it. I'm not
eating that mystery meat.
No, I feel like I was in an office building where something had been sitting for like 3 days.
Right.
But
that's not
it
true.
Actually was pretty good.
I know, that's not true. Actually, people behind there cooking it and making it awesome.
That's not to be discussed.
We're not going to get into that.
A mystery fried meatball or whatever it is.
That's pretty much what it was.
So if it
you know, qualifies how good it was. I've actually ordered it multiple times now. I went back.
And I'm glad you said something about I'm glad you said something about the Indonesian food, Jim, because the last time I was there, Terry and Lee and I ate in an Indonesian restaurant. I've never set foot in an Indonesian restaurant. I didn't know what to expect, but it was a lot of I don't really like peanut sauce.
Right?
And they really used peanut sauce and to me, it was fabulous. I would definitely go back. I forget the name of it, but I would go again for sure.
There's a lot of cool places, though, as far as food goes. Like I said, it's very eclectic. So,
right.
So, what else, Brian? Since you're the only non-visitor,
Amsterdam person. Oh, I'm sure I could come up with a bunch more questions. So, did you guys ever grab one of the bicycles or rent one of the bicycles to ride around?
We haven't, and everybody's told us you need to do it, but we're all scared to do it because say something. It is, unless you've seen it, you don't really know unless you've seen it, because there are so many, and there are, you know, they have their rules that they abide by, just like we do on our roads. Seriously, like I said, they have the right of way, and they are the king of transportation in that particular area. You have to pay attention to them. And I would recommend renting one and trying it out. I just haven't done it yet because there's been so many other things to do.
Is that how all the bicycles end up in the canal?
Yeah.
Is it Americans that go over there and rent one?
I bet it's not just Americans. I bet it's a lot of other people too. But yeah, that probably has a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
We also don't want to die on these trips. You know, we've got, our group has a history with bicycles in places like Key West. So,
well, I would say...
Wow, that's absolutely a story we need to have a discussion about. It.
I would say, based on Eric's comment earlier, it's a good thing he has friends to travel with, or you all not pulling him off the train tracks, he might not be with us.
This is true.
Well, I guess we'll wrap it up for today. Thank you for listening to Friends That Carry On. Last week, what did we talk about last week? We talked about Notre Dame.
Yeah, right? We finished up on Notre Dame. Yeah.
We finished up on Notre Dame.
That.
If you have any questions on Notre Dame, give us a call. Give us a shout out at friendsatcarryon.com. Make sure you check out our promotions on all of our social media applications and platforms. And thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. Jim, do you have anything to close on?
You know, my one big piece of advice, if you're going to Amsterdam, you can order tickets online beforehand for the most popular places, for the Anne Frank House, for the Rijksmuseum, and for the Van Gogh Museum. Don't get 8 o'clock in the morning because you're probably going to be hungover. Get something late in the afternoon, and then you won't get there and find out that there are no tickets available because those places do get packed very early.
Yeah, I mean, that's one quick suggestion, too, to follow up on that, and it's a lot of places. So you either can get lucky and go early and get ahead of a crowd. There's a lot to be said, too, that as long as you're fine with that, is going late in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Because the line is small, you get in, everybody is leaving, and you can kind of get a quick in and out type of thing that a lot of times is better off. But you're right, I would grab tickets well in advance, and there are a couple things where you can group those together, similar to like we were talking about with Paris. You can get a pass to get, or a multi-package thing where you can get 4 or 5 of those locations.
Yeah, you could do this. You could do the same thing with getting train tickets within the city, like I was talking earlier, to be able to take the train out to the furthest, you know, stop and bring it back in. Okay. You can get tickets right there at the train station, and they have all the information you need there.
Awesome.
On the other hand, don't overschedule when you're going to Amsterdam. That's a, you know, great cafe culture, great place just to sit out and to relax and watch the world go by. So if you know you're going to, you have to go see the Anne Frank House, book it in advance, but don't, book 20,000 things and run yourself ragged.
Absolutely.
Because there's a lot to do.
Well, yeah, just like Jim, you were talking about too, the cafe, not the coffee house, but the cafe lifestyle, and the fact that there's so many canals, every place that's it has a view.
Mm-hmm.
And there's people. So.
There's wonderful people watching. It's a wonderful people watching city, that's for sure.
It is.
It's every bit as good as Paris or any of the other.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to get that far.
I like the people watching.
I know. I want to go now.
Yeah, it's a great place to hit. And again, there are so many international connections that go through there.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great spot if you're gonna fly into Europe to spend a couple of days, either on the front or back end, and make it a connection.
Even if you don't get out of the airport, Schiphol is awesome.
Yeah, you can literally. Well, they have a casino.
Do they?
Yeah.
They have a casino.
That was the only thing I would ever say and complain about the whole airport was, what was it, 2-3 years ago? I think it's done now, the renovations. Oh, my God, it just threw everything in haywire. But trying to get from one end to the next.
And
but,
I will tell you, they have a really good pho kiosk.
Yes, they do.
If you like pho, Vietnamese pho or pho, whatever you decide to call it, it's wonderful, I'll go ahead and say it, hangover food. And when you're in that airport and you need a good hot soup, go to the pho kiosk.
I think on that layover that we were just talking about earlier, that was where we went.
It will cure anything ailment that you had. It's hot and it's good. Like I said, all the food, Amsterdam does everyone else's food very well.
Yeah.
They don't have a particular cuisine, but they do everyone else's. Awesome. So on that, we'll just sign off for today.
Yep.
And we'll see you next week, and we thank you for listening. Yep. Have a good one. Have Ciao.
Au revoir.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you, guys.
Be sure to join the friends next week with another great podcast. And don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already. You can also find the friends and other content on www.friendsthatcarryon.com or check us out on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook by searching Friends That Carry On. Thanks again for joining us. And don't forget to carry on, friends.